Welcome to Outsources. I'm your host, Karen Rayforth. Tonight, we get to introduce the new executive director of the National LGBTQ Task Force, Kiara Johnson. Kiara's been the deputy executive director the past few years of the task force and served on their board of directors and in its National Action Council. She has broad experience in organizational leadership and management, program development, youth leadership, and reproductive justice. She's served on multiple national boards and has been honored with multiple awards. As a bisexual Black woman, she will become one of the few out queer-identified women of color at the helm of a national LGBTQ organization. Welcome, Kiara.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad to be with you today.
I am so glad you had time. I know you've just barely gotten established. You started February 1st. So, I mean, you're just getting going. I wanted to be able to introduce you and make sure people know about the task force. We've heard from Ray Carey a few times over the years on Outsources. We wanted to establish you because you've been behind the scenes, right behind her for the past number of years. And I wanted to make sure people knew about you too, and all the great things the task force does for us that I'm very aware of and have been grateful for many, many years. I'd like to give people a little context about you personally, professionally, so we have some context in which to then talk from.
Like you said, I've been at the task force for a little over 3 years. Before that, I spent about 20 years in the reproductive health rights and justice field. And held so many jobs and functions in that movement, from being an organizer to development work. I eventually became an executive director of an organization in that movement as well, and always saw these movements as connected, right? Like inextricably connected. There's so many foundational values that I think our movements have been built on that make us like twin sisters, maybe fraternal twins, maybe not identical twins, but you know, bodily autonomy, self-determination, this ability to own our bodies, right, and have agency within those bodies is just so fundamental, right, and at the core of our movements, pleasure and joy, right, breaking out of boxes, right, refusing to be forced into, right, a definition of us that someone else has created, right? So it was kind of it made total sense to me to be entering into this movement in the second phase of, I guess, my grown-up professional life. I'm from Georgia originally, lived in Colorado on and off for about 8 years. I am a parent of three. I love what I do, and I can't imagine being any place else than right where I'm at right now.
Well, I'm really glad you made those connections for us around reproductive justice and the LGBTQ movement, because sometimes people are perplexed of why they have so much entwined. Talking a moment ago, just before we started, about your connections to Colorado and to Georgia, of which there have been tragedies in both, just very, very freshly and recently for us. And that too shows us how entwined we are as a community. We are not these silos, and that we're all entwined for good and for bad together.
I so believe that the work of, you know, the LGBTQ movement right now, and of the task force specifically, is to make plain that LGBTQ people are everywhere, right? And that we hold so many identities, like even in one body, right? And so,
like you,
right, exactly. And you know, it's not like, you know, I get to turn off my woman-ness or turn off my parent-ness or turn off my Black-ness or turn off my Southern-ness, a bisexual or pansexual person for the day, right? And each of us is impacted and affected by all of the identities that we hold and all of the networks and communities that we are a part of. One of my goals is to continue to challenge people who think or express an idea that somehow there's such thing as not an LGBTQ issue, right? Working on immigration, that's not an LGBTQ issue. Working on prison reform, that's not an LGBTQ issue. When in fact, LGBTQ people are disproportionately affected and impacted or uniquely impacted in all of the ways, right? And connected to all of the social justice issues that we care about and are trying to make progress on. So, you know, this, you know, the shootings in Atlanta and the shootings in Colorado, that is not disconnected from the daily violence Black trans women are experiencing on a daily basis, right? It is not separate from the harassment and bullying that queer kids are experiencing at their high schools or middle schools. It is not separate from the Black folks who are being racially profiled in their own neighborhoods and are rightfully fearful of being hurt, detained, or even murdered, right? That violence is all connected and it all lives in our bodies, right? And it impacts our psyche. It impacts our ability to trust. It impacts our ability to feel safe and to be free. Right. And so gun violence is an LGBTQ issue. It always has been. Right. Pulse in Florida was a great, not great, but a poignant example of just how critical and integral our engagement in ending gun violence is as a community. It's not separate. It's all very much connected.
Yeah, just it often I think is people feel overwhelmed how connected things are. And so sometimes they want to just look at one or two issues and put little blinders around themselves, yeah, their families, and say, I'm only going to just focus on this one little tiny thing, which is right. Fine. It's good, start wherever you can. And they are all cocooned together. And you're right, they just land in our bodies and in our souls and in our brains. So we carry around and sometimes get solidified our prejudices and biases, as well as our fears. You know, that we've had a fear culture that people kind of ascribe back to 9/11, but I would say it's been going on forever. The stories we've been telling about whoever is the other out there, whoever we make this other or the scapegoat or whatever, is who we become fearful of and try to oppress, get rid of, throw away, put them in prison. That way we'll never have to think about them again. The bad guys are in prison. Which, of course, the last 4 years would seem to teach many of us that the bad guys aren't in prison at all. As a matter of fact, the worst bad guys are running loose. But it's part of what feeds the toxicity in our community, all the bad news, you know, that's what gets fed to us versus what's working, what can we do, you know, even sometimes it may not even be what's the good news. There isn't any some days, but what's next? What's doable? What can we do? What can we be doing? What is possible? what's your hope for yourself as a leader? What's your vision about what you can do as a leader, what the task force is going to be up to in the next year or two to help us sort through the morass and keep going with hope?
Yeah, I am hopeful. And, you know, all we have to do is look at the successes. I mean, even in the last 10 years, right? We've got a long way to go, right? Our work for justice, right, is never done. And we are seeing shifts, right? When we won marriage equality, that was a big shift. Mm-hmm. When we see, corporations being held accountable, right, by organized groups of folks, like through Color of Change, right? Black Lives Matter, the Dreamers, that is, I don't know how anyone couldn't get excited, right? Like the Women's March, Standing Rock, that, all of those are examples of the people, right, taking back their power, right? Acknowledging their personal power, acknowledging their community power, engaging civically, engaging in the community, right? And creating a galvanized force of people who love this country and knows that we can do better and hold us accountable to doing better. That feels really good, you know, to see we are actively and intentionally bearing witness, right, to the creation of a new reality. White supremacy doesn't have to be the winning force, right? It doesn't have to be our norm. Sexism and toxic masculinity doesn't have to just stand unchecked, right? Mm-hmm. I see that as a part of our work of the task force. You know, I'm Generation X, the millennials are in, you know, that are working professionals, and the next generation, Z, if you will, they're coming in, right? They're coming into their own as well. And I would say with each generation, there are fewer and fewer of us that see our work in a siloed way, mm-hmm. right? Again, as a queer Black, woman, I feel very connected to, racial justice organizations and Black Lives Matter. I feel very connected to women's leadership, or women in leadership in reproductive and women's rights and gender justice organizations. And we're thinking together, right? We're strategizing together. And I think we're coming up with some new solutions to some very old problems. I think we have to keep that alive and keep moving forward, because like you said, there's so much that still needs to change, right? And to shift, and people have to be reminded, I think, of the success that we have had and who is at the center and core of that. Folks have talked about Georgia, like, oh my God, Georgia turned blue. And it's like, it wasn't magic. It was people of color, Black women, Georgians, right? Like mm-hmm. sitting down with other Georgians, right? Proud to be Georgians, and turning that country blue by facing head on what the real needs, wants, and fears are of the communities across Georgia. And that's what we have to do.
If you're just joining us, I'm your host, Karen Rayforth. My guest tonight is Kira Johnson, Executive Director of the National LGBTQ Task Force, the oldest LGBTQ advocacy group in the United States. Join us.
I've got my eyes on the Equality Act. I want to see it pass. I think we have a chance to pass it. Have we made roads forward, pathways forward, progress? Sure. Are we done? No. Not when you can be kicked out of your home because you know, you're a woman and you have a woman who's a partner and that you show up, you know, to sign a lease together, right? We're not done when, gosh, a young trans girl can be put in jail or fined for being on a, you know, playing girl sports. Mm-hmm. We're not done when medical professionals and EMTs in, I think, Arkansas can deny you service because you're transgender or you're a lesbian. Our work is not done yet. And I'm excited that the Equality Act even exists. And I'm excited that people in this country are philosophically for it. And now the time is for us to take action to realize it and make it happen.
And people need to see, no matter who their identity is and all the things that you keep talking about, it's part of their fight. You know, whether it's two women going to sign a lease, that somebody thinks they're a same-sex couple or they're trans or whatever.
Right.
You know, this was a fight we had back in the early 90s about you could be discriminated against even if you were straight. How do you, there's no card to prove that you're straight. There's no card to prove that you're not trans or whatever, all your identities. It's so hard for us to see that we are all of the same fabric, many different colors and weaves and textures, and which makes us wonderful. Also that we all have a stake in so many things. It's so important.
Yeah. There's no limit to love and justice, right? There's no limit. Like, let's not put limits on something that's limitless. That's good.
It's good. Why are we fighting over who you can love?
Yeah, let's lean into it. And we are all a part of the fabric of humanity. And any policy that takes a chunk of somebody's humanity away is a loophole, right, that allows for more people's humanity to be taken away. It might not be yours right now, but it opens the door for that. It sets a precedent for that. And I think that's at the core of the work of the task force. And it's my personal, mission is that we are honoring people's full humanity, right? And that means dignity. It means wellness. It means the ability to thrive and to contribute and to feel joy. Mm-hmm. That's got to be at the center of our work, period.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you look back at as some of us have been looking back at our history and the skewed view of the history we were all taught, it's so clear how many losses and progress that we failed to have because we've oppressed different people or different groups at different times in the name of fear, ignorance, tradition. But think of all the people who could have maybe invented something to save a child or to, maybe we'd never been in this situation with the virus. If really we'd allow people to contribute without the limits on, no, you're not allowed. We won't educate you. We won't support you. We won't fund you. We won't let you live with us. You know, we won't whatever, fill in the blank. So that then brings us back to not only the individual's role, but the system. People have talked, particularly this summer, talked about systemic change, you know, being so critical. And that's so hard to do. How is a task force going to attack that? The Equality Act is certainly one way, because that has so many different tentacles out there that could be really good.
I fundamentally believe that it is about re-engaging people in the fight to rebuild our democracy. It is not an accident that over the last, 10 more years, we've seen an influx of policies and campaigns meant to limit who gets to be involved in the political process, right? And that's from denying people information, clear information about issues, policies, legislation that affect them and what the impact really could and will be. It's people's names getting scrubbed, right, from Board of Elections, right, impacting their ability to vote. It is literally being physically not being allowed, right, to vote. One of the campaigns the task force worked on a couple of years ago, had the joy and honor to work on a couple of years ago, was the Second Chances campaign in Florida. And we did, we were leading the LGBTQ outreach on that campaign. And one of the things people didn't know is that, well, one, that women's prisons are the fastest growing prisons in the country, which makes prison reform a women's issue. And two, that 40% of women in prison identify as lesbian, bisexual, queer, or queer, mm-hmm. which makes it an LGBTQ issue.
Right.
And, you know, over 30 states in this country limit the right to vote or access to vote for people who have served in prison. And that in some states it's misdemeanors, in some states it's felonies. In some states, it's a few months. And in some states like Florida, it was indefinitely. And so again, right, we see it over and over and over again. Black folks, poor folks, queer folks, women, young people, right? Big campaigns to prevent, you know, women in college towns from being able to vote where they are. It's not by accident. It's intentional. It is intentional. And so I believe, you know, with every fiber in my being, the more people we ensure are access to the political, you know, to political engagement, the closer we are going to really get to justice and equity. And you know, a lot of it, you know, so much of politics has been, you know, made to be, you know, untouchable, right? Inaccessible. And it is our job as people who believe in social change to make it accessible, right? To talk about the impact. One of the things that I'm really proud of us for is our work on the census campaign last year. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, 15, 20 years ago, no one probably ever could have guessed that, you know, talking about the census would be a game changer or sexy, or, you know, it's probably one of the least sexy issues you could, you know, knock on the door and talk to people about. And the census is about how billions of dollars move in our country. Who gets healthcare, right? Who gets the COVID vaccine and when? How long lines are drawn in our state? What are the supports for homeless folks and youth? And when we started really talking about not the census, but what the census meant and what the impact was, all of a sudden we saw fire. People understood what it meant to be counted, what it meant to be counted and what was at stake. And we were able to reach millions of people to engage them in this fight to make sure all people were getting counted. And yes, the census is an LGBTQ issue, right? Again, right? You look at, yeah, we're right back there. You look at homelessness, over 40% of young people on the streets identify as queer. Mm-hmm. That's an LGBTQ issue, mm-hmm. period. Mm-hmm. And who gets those funds? The census determines. That makes the census an LGBTQ issue. Mm-hmm. And so that's the work. That's our work to do.
So many things ahead of you, so many things. I know we're about out of time, but so how are you personally getting through the pandemic with you and your family? And How are you holding body and soul together? It's a big menu of things for you to be doing and choosing from professionally.
Yeah.
Personally.
I appreciate the question. You know, we're all, you know, we continue to social distance, right? The staff are doing, our staff folks are doing such great work. I don't even know how they continue to just do the sheer amount and the quality of work while not being able to be around each other in an office. And it takes its toll, you know, it's not an easy thing to be a people organization and not get to be around people, right? And, you know, we do our best to name what's going on with us, right? And really work to not just pretend it's business as usual, but to take the time to name the things that we're challenged by, but also to take the time to name the things that are bringing us joy right now, which are sometimes so little and matter so much. And personally, I am so ready to stop this shelter at home thing. I can't even tell you, Karen. Oh my God, I think my kids are so tired of me. Like, our 13-year-old, can you imagine being 13 and having to be around your parents all the time?
No.
Dude, not cool. If I thought we were uncool before, we are like ultimately not cool right now, given as much time as she's had to spend with us. So, and it's also a gift. You know, I have a 3-year-old, an 11-year-old, and a 13-year-old. I have to tell you, I find a lot of joy and appreciation just getting to spend this kind of time with them, right? As much as we all get on each other's nerves, I'm not saying it's like all rosy. And I've gotten to be a part of conversations and thinking and doing with them over the last year that I have never been able to do before and am not likely going to have the chance to do after everything opens back up again. And so I have to tell you, my appreciation for relationships and the closeness, right? The ability to put my lips to someone's cheek, right? Or to feel someone's breath on my neck when I hug them, right? That I have such a deeper appreciation for that more than I ever did before. And those are the kinds of things that keep me going.
Thank you so much for sharing professionally and personally with us today and seeing you at Creating Change next year. It's always an important thing to go
to be in New Orleans. So hopefully we'll be in person in New Orleans in 2022. Well, thank you so much for having me, Karen. This was super fun and I can't wait to do it again with you.
Me too. You've been listening to Outsources with my guest, Kiara Johnson, Executive Director of the National LGBTQ Task Force. If you missed the full interview, you can hear it at news.kgnu.org/outsources or find Outsources in the archives at kgnu.org. Listen or stream Outsources each Monday evening from 6:30 to 7. This is Karen Rayforth. Here at Outsources, we care about you. Take care of your blessings.